It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Just under 1,000 refugees from around the world have been resettled here in Iowa this year. These people, families with moms, dads, kids, they've fled danger in their native countries and come to Iowa from a host of countries, from the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa. Also, people fleeing from their homeland in Bhutan, that's a Buddhist kingdom in the Himalayas, also from Burma in Southeast Asia, and a handful resettling to Iowa from Syria. Let's find out more with Larry Bartlett, Director of Refugee Admissions for the U.S. State Department. Larry Bartlett, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
Tell us a little bit about the danger these people are fleeing from in their homelands. I know they all have different backstories in their homelands, but tell us what is driving them out of their countries.
Sure. In fact, everybody has the one common thread is that people have been forced to flee, and they fled for their lives. In many, many cases, they fled because they've been persecuted, sometimes by their own governments, sometimes by others. But the common story in a refugee's life is that they've been forced to leave home. They've been forced to leave just about everything behind. Number one, just to preserve their own family and their lives. Most of them have fled to a neighboring country. So in the case of the Burmese, during that violence period, a lot of people fled to Thailand, and many people fled to Malaysia. And, of course, for the Syrians, they fled to Turkey, Lebanon, Iraq, and Jordan. In many cases, those refugees have been in these neighboring countries, who've helped shelter them for many, many years. The Burmese were there for at least 15 years. But during this time, it's still been sometimes precarious for them. And so the U.S., along with about 30 other countries, does have a permanent resettlement program so that people can actually start over, create a new life, and create a new future.
I guess I was surprised, as I think many of our listeners will be, as a large number, the bulk from the Democratic Republic of Congo coming to the U.S. as refugees. What has driven them here? What's happening there?
So Democratic Republic of Congo is, again, one of these kind of little-known stories. You know, Syria has made all the headlines, but the fighting in eastern Congo has been going on for many, many years. People continue to flee over time, and kind of the common story is that nobody can go home. And so we have large Congolese populations in Tanzania, in Rwanda, in Burundi, and Uganda. And so we, the U.S. government, with some of the assistance of the U.N., have been helping a number of these refugees find a new life in the United States.
Mm-hmm. So when they come to Iowa, and I just mentioned just under 1,000 refugees from around the world have been resettled this year here in Iowa, some of these are fleeing with just their belongings, the shirts on their backs.
Right. So one of the stories about refugees is important for people to know is they've not recently fled their country. So in the case of Syrians, they might have fled maybe 4 years ago. But for the most part, refugees have been sitting in a camp or maybe in an urban area for some number of years. But again, as refugees, they have very little. You know, they haven't been allowed to legally work in many situations. They might have been receiving foreign assistance, so for food and for shelter, even some education. But yes, they don't have a lot of material goods, and they certainly don't have any wealth. I mean, these are fairly people with fairly meager belongings. But what they do have, frankly, is the resolve to really start over. And I have to say, I think the one uplifting story, I think, after another, and I think if your listeners were to engage with refugees in Iowa, what they would see is that these people are resilient. You know, these are the people that fled. They had enough willpower to get up and make something better for themselves immediately, but they've also seized this opportunity to come to a new country to start over. And so, again, we find as little as they may bring with them in terms of material possessions, they bring even more in terms of their energy, their drive, their ambition to find a job, to get their kids in school, and to succeed. And in many cases, in most cases, they do.
In this political season, Larry Bartlett, there's plenty of talk of the security risk refugees might pose. Since 9/11, the U.S. has welcomed hundreds of thousands of refugees. What is the record on refugees being connected with terrorism?
Actually, the record is very positive in the sense that there have been very, very few incidents of refugees being connected, certainly with a terrorist act in the United States, but even terrorist plots. There have been a handful. And that's unfortunate. Every time there has been an incident where somebody has been implicated in some kind of a plot, our intelligence agencies and this administration has done a lot of work to figure out, is there something that was missed? Is there something that could be improved in the screening process? But I think one of the one of the good stories about this program is that we have made every precaution, taken every step we can to make sure that people can't penetrate this program, that people are who they say they are, that they aren't committing fraud, and that they don't have ill intentions against the U.S. So, the president has said it, the Secretary of State has said it. This is the most thoroughly checked population of any population that we admit to the United States. It's one we do as an obligation because, of course, we don't want to bring people to the United States who would do us harm. But we also want to bring the people who are truly refugees and truly in need of this second chance. So the record has been very, very good.
Mm-hmm. What do you say? And I guess some of what you just said is what you would say. But to those who say, okay, I understand refugees need a place to go, and we have a long tradition of accepting refugees, but at this moment in time, in this time of terrorism, we should not be accepting any refugees from Muslim countries. In fact, echoing the words of Donald Trump, the presidential nominee.
I think what we've said time and time before is that, these refugees are people who are fleeing terrorists. The fact that many of our refugees are Muslim is frankly to basically a factor of the places they're coming from. Syria is in utter chaos with many, many bad elements. Over half of the population of Syria has been displaced. So, we're helping those families. We're helping some of the children. People like the children whose photos you've seen in the newspaper that I think have been so powerful. We're helping them find another life. And I think to make decisions based on people's faith or the country they're coming from isn't the right decision. The decision we should be making is how can we help and how can we do that in a way that is safe for our country and is really responsible in terms of our humanitarian values.
Let me quote Iowa's Governor Branstad. This is from November of last year. Have you react to that? He said then, "We have welcomed refugees from around the world into Iowa. We must continue to have compassion for others, but we must also maintain the safety of Iowans and the security of our state until a thorough and thoughtful review is conducted by the intelligence community and the safety of Iowans can be assured. The federal government should not resettle any Syrian refugees in Iowa." I wonder, Larry Bartlett of the U.S. State Department, has the State Department worked with Iowa to assure the governor, the authorities here, that this is safe?
So what we have done is we've worked with many states. When some of the information about Syrians and some of the governors reacted to the Syrian program last fall, what we found out was that some of the governors weren't receiving real information about who was being resettled to their state. So we have offered them that information. Again, states don't have an ability to pick and choose nationalities that would not fit within the context of our program. But we have offered more information to governors, including information about how the security checks are done. I think one thing I would amplify in terms of the governor's comment about the vetting is that the vetting is actually not done by the Department of State. The vetting is done by professional intelligence and law enforcement agencies, including the FBI. So, the CIA, the FBI, the National Counterterrorism Center, fingerprints are run against the Defense Department databases. So there is a very, very robust vetting regime, and that continues to be examined, I think, almost every day. So, again, I think for those who think that there isn't one or that it's not strong enough, I would simply offer them to be briefed about the full scope of the vetting.
Mm-hmm. Compared to other states, how supportive is Iowa's state government when it comes to helping resettle refugees?
I think Iowa actually has a very strong tradition. I know that it goes back to 1975, and at one time the state of Iowa itself was the sponsor instead of the local agency. So, we've actually had a very proud history with Iowa, and again, it goes back through many governors and I think many parties. So, again, I applaud Iowa, not just the government, but also the people of Iowa. And you know, I'm always heartened when I go out, even to places where there might be negative opinions about the program, and I go to the local level and I meet people who are volunteering. I meet people at the churches and the synagogues who are really helping families. And it's really the common message of this program is that it's a people-to-people program. And it's about Americans, you know, reaching down to help somebody who's less fortunate, and then the refugees, frankly, becoming a very strong part of a community and people who will serve that community for many, many years to come.
Mm-hmm. So the goal here is for these refugees to stay in Iowa long term.
Well, the goal and the United States. I mean, when refugees come to the United States, this in some ways, for the first time, they've been free for many years. It's the first time they've been working with a government that is sympathetic and is going to protect them as opposed to abuse them. They're free to move as soon as they arrive, but we certainly don't plan the program that way. We plan it for them to come to a place, become part of that community. There's an apartment that's rented on their behalf with federal money. That money dwindles over the course of the first 8 months so that people are encouraged to get jobs, and in fact, if they don't, it will be very difficult for them. We really want them to contribute to the community. We want them to give back. We want their kids to start getting high-quality education in our public school system. And after 5 years, they're eligible to take the citizenship test and become Americans, and many refugees do.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, what can Iowans do listening to this? Perhaps some people listening to this have in their immediate family or their extended families refugee stories and gratitude toward the United
sure.
States for previous generations of accepting refugees. What can someone listening do to help?
Yeah, and I would also expand just immigrants. I mean, people's family or their forefathers may have come as immigrants, not as refugees. But again, connecting with the newcomer, connecting with the agencies that serve them. I know in Iowa we have both the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants in Des Moines, and also the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is active in both Des Moines and Cedar Rapids. And so I think if people, your listeners, live in those areas, they should contact those organizations and see how they can help. These organizations, although they receive federal funding, are very dependent on volunteers. They're very dependent on other philanthropy and from the community. This really is a public-private partnership. So even though there is taxpayer money that goes into some of the program, it also depends on the community support very much. And so, again, I think, you know, meet a refugee, help a refugee. I think people will be amazed at not only what they can give to a refugee, but also what they can learn from some of these families that have endured so much but are moving on.
Mm-hmm. And in many cases, the people who are coming here as refugees have lost family members, haven't they?
They've lost family members, and even the family members that come with them have been traumatized. I mean, many of the refugees, you mentioned the Congo, have witnessed or even experienced horrible acts. You know, people fleeing, obviously, the war in Syria. Again, you know, horrible images, and those images are searing and true. So, you know, people have experienced a lot of trauma. I think in many cases people can move forward successfully without a lot of additional help, but it does take time to heal. And so, again, I think that's part of this whole process of assimilation and acculturation and adjustment. But, again, I come from the Midwest myself, just a little bit north of you in Wisconsin, and I have to say I can think of no better place in the United States to go than to the Midwest, where people are friendly and happy and welcoming.
Mm-hmm. Place this a little bit in a greater context. We are experiencing a worldwide refugee crisis in the world, and the U.S. has been criticized for not taking in a greater share of refugees, specifically from Syria. I mean, other countries, Canada and Germany, to name a couple, have been much more welcoming, haven't they, compared?
Well, at least in terms of Syrians, we still have the largest program in the world, not on a per capita basis, but in terms of sheer volume. So this year we welcomed about 85,000 refugees, of which over 12,000 were Syrians. It's, you know, yes, we've welcomed fewer Syrians than Canada did this year, but our program, frankly, will be ongoing. We expect it to be larger next year for Syrians. And in fact, our overall program next year has moved from 85,000 this last year to 110,000 this coming year. So we're still the world's leader. We think that our program is quite generous. It has a lot of checks and balances in it, and again, the security checks are the largest, but also medical checks. It's a system that I think that is about the right size. I mean, we can operate it. We have, I think, the hosting communities like Iowa that can receive the refugees. But we can't solve the refugee problem through resettlement. Mm-hmm. And so it's, again, one of the reasons that the U.S. is also the leader in refugee assistance overseas, because those people who are still in Jordan or who are still in Tanzania who will never be resettled, they also need assistance, they need housing, they need medical care. And so we do provide government funding to help those refugees as well.
Mm-hmm. If Hillary Clinton is elected president, I think it's safe to assume that the refugee policy will continue pretty much as it has under President Obama. If Donald Trump is elected president with his views, is there thoughts at the State Department of how this may drastically change given his statements?
Well, at this moment in time, we're not actually planning around the elections. So we've been asked by President Obama to, again, grow the program this coming fiscal year. And so we're making plans to arrive 110,000. So, again, we'll wait for the elections, I think, and we'll see what happens and then whatever policy changes might need to take place. One thing I would say is that over the years, Congress has been extremely supportive of this program, both sides of the aisle. So, again, we would hope and count, I think, on that support as well.
Okay. Larry Bartlett, Director of Refugee Admissions for the U.S. State Department. Thank you very much for talking with us, Larry.
Thank you. It was really my pleasure.